everyone, Neil Battaglia. Thank you for downloading the latest episode of the Indian Startup Show. So in this week's episode, I chat to husband and wife team, Arjit and Kamika, the co-founders of Kudek. They're building really cool game-based learning products for businesses in India and the rest of the world, and they're doing really well. So in this conversation, we talk about how we got started, how the products actually work, what games-based learning is, and how it's better than traditional-based learning. Both share great insights on life as entrepreneurs, the setbacks, the fun, building a team, getting out of the comfort zone, management styles, quitting corporate life after 15 years, and how they first met. So please enjoy the show. Thank you. And stay tuned at the end if you want to do your own podcast. Thank you. Hello, guys. Thanks for coming on the Indian Startup Show today. If you could introduce yourself and what you're building, please.
Sure. So thanks so much for having us here. It's a great pleasure to be here. And I'm Kamalika Bhattacharya. I'm one of the co-founders of this company called Kudek Technologies. And the other person on the line is Arijit Lahiri, who is my co-founder and husband. Kudek as a product is a learning management system. We are a B2B a company. We sell to other companies who are looking to train their employees. Mm-hmm. And our product allows them to kind of take their entire training, do it in a way that's mobile, very new age, exciting, engaging for their learners, mm-hmm. using games. So Kudek essentially is a game-based learning management system mm-hmm. for companies.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. And how did you get started?
Well, actually, both of us came from fairly long stints in industry. Mm-hmm. You know, we both spent 14, 15 years in financial services. We had really boring banking jobs. And I think both of us were really passionate gamers. So initially, the entire idea was to try and figure out how we could fit in games into enterprise, how we could bring games to work at business. Mm-hmm. I think that's where the initial thought was born. And we actually started off with, something which was very basic. We started off with board games. Mm-hmm. And for many years, we just did, little assignments here and there, trying to see how games would fit in. Mm-hmm. So maybe 2 years after we started, two and a half years after we actually started the business and we quit our jobs and we'd been doing a bunch of these things, mm-hmm. The product thought was actually born because we said, now it's time to kind of consolidate and build something mm-hmm. larger. So that's where Kudek was born. But yeah, it came out of our passion for games and bringing games to business. Mm-hmm. Arijit, do you want to add something here?
Yeah. So to be very honest, the product really was built as a result of client work, which we kept doing, and we kind of kept finding things which were common, which all clients seemed to like. Mm-hmm. So we kind of started building them together into the product, and that's how it evolved. Mm-hmm. It was not so much of a brainwave or a light bulb moment. It really was going out there, listening to the market and building what they want.
Mm-hmm. Okay. You mentioned games-based learning. What actually is games-based learning then?
Okay. So the idea of games is you kind of challenge people, you kind of motivate them with certain goals and objectives, which are, which are more in tune with normal human beings, right? Mm-hmm. So learning, when people look at it, enterprise learning in particular, the idea is people have to be kind of bribed, bullied, or they need to be begged to go through the enterprise learning that the enterprise is putting out to them. Now, our thought was, the biggest problem that enterprises seem to be facing was that no matter what they put out, people were just not adopting. Right. So we said, okay, how do we bring games to bear on this and make it more interesting? So what we do is that the same content, we kind of put it through games and game mechanics, and it makes it more interesting for the people, so for the learners, and the learners kind of want to come in and do it themselves. So to give you an example, I can ask a very basic example. I could put out a quiz and say, okay, here are 10 questions, or I can give you a slot machine where by answering the question, you get free rolls, that kind of stuff. Mm.
So why does it work then, as opposed to the normal traditional types of learning, do you think?
So normal traditional learning, relies on a lot of maybe classroom teaching. Mm. It relies on a slide-based approach where you put up slides, there's information on it, you read it and you kind of understand the subject matter, right? Whereas if you look at how human beings intuitively learn, they learn by doing, they learn by trial and error. It's how we are driven. Right. So from that perspective, games actually encourage that particular behavior where you can have a game where you repetitively play a set of 50 questions. So say, for example, you were playing Angry Birds, and it's only when you answer a question correctly that you're actually able to get the, pigs at the other end. Mm-hmm. Right. So the entire mechanic of the game is encouraging people to explore, to try and do it, trial and error, that sort of thing. And that's why it works, because it excites our natural curiosity. It excites our natural excitement at doing something challenging. And that's why game-based learning kind of has been proven to get better results on learning than your traditional approaches.
Mm-hmm. You said you've been doing it for 2 years. Can you share some stats? How many customers, how many games you've developed, etc., perhaps?
Sure. So we've been actually doing it for about, 5-7 years now. Mm-hmm. We launched the product in the market 5 years back, and we've done really well. The product has seen a lot of acceptance. We have over 27 large enterprise clients who are on the product. Mm-hmm. They have about 210,000 enterprise learners who are on the product learning as well. Just in terms of, the product itself has it's an amalgamation of different products in the learning industry. So what we've done, which is disruptive to the traditional learning industry, is bought many of these products under the same roof. Mm-hmm. So we have authoring within the product. We have a game library, which has over 100 game engines. Mm-hmm. And of course, we have the learning management system platform. So that consolidated product, we have over 100 game engines. We have a ready content library of over 150 hours of content. So a fair amount that's actually gone into Codec today.
Mm-hmm. Oh, no, that's really good. Is that what you expected when you first started about 5 years ago? What were your expectations back then?
Actually, I think, when we first started, so I was an investment banker. I was raising money for, successful companies, people who had already made it. And I kind of asked myself a question that, if you work really hard at it and you have the right idea, how hard could it be, right? And I think it was the stupidest question I've ever asked myself. So I think definitely when we first started, our expectations of success out of what we could build were fairly unrealistic. We didn't definitely realize how iterative it would be, how many setbacks there usually are. You're just kind of bred to think that success comes easy. Mm-hmm. I think that's the first thing that gets hammered out of you.
Kamal, if I could cut you. See, the basic thought which we were all bred with was you put in effort and you get results, mm-hmm. right? When you do the startups, that was the first myth which got busted. No matter how smart you work, mm-hmm. no matter how hard you work, results were not necessarily always in control. The only thing which kept us going and was the fact that you needed to be patient, you need to have the tempers, the fortitude to kind of keep going at it, keep sticking at it. Mm-hmm. And that's really the only thing which has got us where we are today. Mm-hmm. I don't think there's been any miracle moments at any point of time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So you mentioned setbacks. Can you give us some examples of setbacks then that you've had and how you overcome them?
We've actually gone through some pretty, difficult ups and downs, mm-hmm. some tragic ones as well. We initially, when we first started, when I said that we started with board games, we were actually initially looking at how we could take it to schools, mm-hmm. do career counseling with it. So that was kind of, the first 6 months, 8 months when we couldn't do anything with it. We tried selling to 80 schools, mm-hmm. Talked to hundreds of parents, and nobody was willing to pay for it. And that was our first setback, I think, where the entire idea that we had kind of blew up in our face and we had to rethink, pivot. Mm-hmm. As they say, and kind of figure out an iteration that worked. That's when we started focusing on corporates, because we knew there was a wallet there willing to pay. Mm-hmm. We've had, other setbacks as well. I think one of the most tragic things to happen to a business, we lost our business partner, our third business partner, about a year and a half back to a very early heart attack.
Oh.
It was quite, very, very difficult thing to go through. Mm-hmm. As an early startup, team revolved around him. But I think the thing about setbacks is that I think they just make you stronger. Mm-hmm. Anything that doesn't shut you down eventually just makes you stronger. So we've learned to view them with a certain amount of, we look back on it and say, yes, we've come out of it. But obviously, when you're going through it, it's very difficult to see the light at the end of the tunnel.
Mm-hmm. So you seem to be doing quite well. What are the aims and objectives over the next 2 years? What do you say?
We've just started charting out our global expansion path. Mm-hmm. I mean, as a tech product coming out of India, we haven't seen too many tech products really make it on the global landscape. Mm-hmm. We aim to be one of them. And given the space that we are, you know, the product has global applicability. Mm-hmm. And therefore, looking at expanding into the U.S. geography, into MENA, into Southeast Asia and Europe, mm-hmm. That's definitely on the cards for us. The other thing that we're doing very strongly is developing the product ecosystem, which is how most tech products grow. Mm-hmm. So having our ecosystem of vendors who are creating on the product, they are taking our product to enterprises, just helps create, you know, the sales velocity or the nonlinear growth that tech companies are known for. So we're focusing on these things. These will be the engines of growth for us in the next couple of years, for sure.
Mm-hmm. And how big is the team then?
We're about 30 people today, mm-hmm. spread across three cities in India. We're headquartered out of Bombay, and we have people in Delhi and Bangalore. And pretty soon, hopefully, you know, we'll have key sales offices in a couple of the global locations as well.
Mm-hmm. So you've hired quite a few people. Do you have any like hiring tips for our listeners then?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, that's one of the most difficult problems that any startup has, right? Hiring people. I think we look for certain key or key elements about people when we hire. One is we really look for people. Sorry.
Yeah. We like sportsmen.
Sportsmen.
We like people who. So the reason we like sportsmen is people who tend to play sports. Don't always. Aren't used to questioning, say, why am I doing this right now? Whatever. They enjoy the activity that they get into, and that's what allows them to do better at what they're doing. Mm-hmm. We like people who are passionate about anything in life, right? Whether it's music, whether it's dance, because again, they are able to channel their attention and focus to something very, very specific, right? Mm-hmm. Kamalika has some more practical ones which she uses.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we like hiring, you know, ex-entrepreneurs. We like people who failed in life, you know, teaches them. It's difficult to be in a startup and not have, you know, and sometimes be able to fail. And being able to fail, I think, is one of the most critical qualities of an entrepreneur. And the way that we run our company, everybody is an entrepreneur in their own right. Mm-hmm. So from that perspective, we look for such people. We have a very young team. The average age of our team is 25, 26. So, you know, catching people early with passion, mm-hmm. With the ability to fail, sometimes just having that grit, I think those are important tips. I think one of the biggest tips that I have for anybody who's looking to hire for a startup is never pay anybody what they ask. Pay them slightly lower and, you know, take them up really soon as well. Mm-hmm. But ideally, people's reasons for joining a startup cannot be money. It has to be the long term. So you need to gauge that, because otherwise what will happen is you end up creating dependencies and depending on people, and you lose them at a time when they're finally starting to contribute. Mm-hmm. So it's one of those things that you really have to be, you know, you have to watch out for. Mm-hmm.
What's your management style like then? Obviously, you spent 14, 15 years in banking and then 5 years in startup. Has it changed?
Quite a bit. I mean, you know, I think in larger companies, when I was managing teams, it was easy to not worry about where salaries came from at the end of, you know, the month. Mm-hmm. But now it's my job to kind of figure out where that money is going to come from. So it kind of changes your perspective on managing people. And I think, you know, going from a place where you would... There was a certain level of interaction you'd have when you were in formal industry, where you know you had the ability not think of work when you step out, because you can't do that in your own startup. I think we know our employees really well. We get involved with them in the sense of, you know, we know how their lives are, we know their issues. Sometimes when startups, you know, payments get delayed, you have to help your employees manage, mm-hmm. You know, finances on their side. So it's a much more intimate relationship in that sense that you have with your team. I think just that level of involvement is very, very different from when I came from banking.
Mm-hmm. The other part is when we were working in the larger old world businesses, mm-hmm. there was a very strong order obey. Like the people who had more experience typically had more understanding, mm-hmm. and you know they would guide stuff. Right. Now. In a tech business, in a kind of a cutting edge tech business, we are like 35, 40 years old, and the guys who are 25 years old, while they are younger, it's a learning that they need to be heard a lot more. Mm. Okay, and rather than being saying, this is what you need to do, you need to let them guide the flow of the product, how the things should go, because they are, funnily enough, or like probably logically enough, they are a lot more in tune with what should be than us. So like, you know, we would control the business, but they would control things like product, how the things, what should go into it, what should be prioritized, what are the new things that should be put in, you know, those pieces. So it's kind of turned on its head. So what we were used to is not what we can do anymore.
Mm-hmm. Is it fun then, what you're doing?
Oh, yeah.
Definitely.
That's simple an answer. There's no way to survive a startup unless you're having fun. It's, you know, it's nothing else. There's no money, glory. All those things are like, you know, they're like little blips. You know, when we started, we were like, you know, yeah, we would like to see ourselves on the shelves. And we saw ourselves on the shelf. It made us happy for like a week, 2 weeks, and then it was gone. But the ongoing thing, like wanting to do what you're doing every single day and enjoying it, that's really what keeps it ticking.
Mm-hmm. But then what's the hardest part about building this business then?
I mean, I think there's not just one, but if I were to say just the one thing, I think sometimes just keeping it on the right path, right? I mean, startups always face this. There are two opposing forces. You sometimes always kind of need to say that, hey, you know, we need to survive. So there's a bunch of things that we need to do. It's the revenue pull. And then as a product company for us, there's a set of right things that we need to do, the right investments we need to make. So there's this constant, you know, kind of friction between these two objectives, as you would say. And that becomes a very, very difficult thing to manage over a period of time. But, you know, as you settle in more, as the product establishes itself, obviously you can lean a lot more to doing the right things, the exact things that you need to do to build your product, and not have to worry so much about the revenue. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the initial years, I think, are about that dichotomous pull. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for me, actually, it's exactly the opposite. The initial years was this constant, it was like fire and brimstone all the time. Mm-hmm. There was like no stuff happening. There was like tremendous excitement. You're always fighting for survival. You're on the edge. Mm-hmm. Now that things are going really well and everything, you know, it's, I miss those days. And that's really for me the hardest part right now. Saying like, you know, yeah, now things are going well. You know, now every day is not a struggle anymore. So it's a little, you're not, you miss those. Miss that, those
you can tell who's the adrenaline junkie, can't you?
Definitely, 100%. What is the future of EdTech in India then? Say in 50 years time, what would it look like in business and in education, would you say? If you have to crystal ball.
Well, I would say that, you know, India is actually, I would actually think of India as one of the players in the forefront of the global market in terms of innovation. You know, the pace at which there are startups coming up in AI, in machine learning, in, you know, Internet of Things, and all of these are being leveraged for things like education. I think India is really where a lot of this innovation is coming out of. And I think what's going to happen is the way education is done is going to completely transform, whether it's within corporates, whether it's, you know, for students. A lot of it is going to be going digital and technology-based, because that's the only way to control costs in the long term. And I think businesses which essentially cater to that are the ones which are on the rise. Of course, you know, being being one of the booming economies in terms of the demographics, I think India is also where one of the largest markets is going to be. And if you look at the global landscape, you know, India and Asia has been one of the fastest growing markets. So I think a lot of global companies are also going to focus on India, which they haven't so far. So we'll see a boom, I would think. If I were to put my analyst hat on, we'll definitely see a boom in the Indian EdTech market.
Mm-hmm. In honest, my two cents on that one is EdTech in India would primarily be driven around the mobility space in a big way over the years to come, because the single definitive factor about India is that it is geographically quite dispersed. Mm-hmm. So whether it's education at a formal, at a higher education level or at a company. Typically, when we are dealing with companies, they have reach across like 300 odd cities. And that is something which will necessarily push learning edtech into the digital space and the mobility space. The other thing is with the internet expansion that are happening with the coming of the various, with the battle of the telecom giants here, internet should get a lot easier. As phones get better, internet gets easier, that mobility will pick up significantly more. And once you have that kind of data moving, you know, then the ability to do things with that data will just start increasing. Like, for example, even now, like when we are doing one of our larger deployments, when you get meaningful size data, you can actually do things like automated training needs analysis, automated, like, you know, course creation. Those things start getting, becoming a reality, which you can't do in small. It's like, you know, farming 10 acres of land versus tending to a kitchen garden. Till now, we have been tending to the kitchen garden. As we go into the 10 acres of lands, we'll get our combined harvesters and stuff. Sorry, I'm bad at analogies, but yeah, I hope you get what I'm saying.
Yeah, definitely. 100%. Let's talk about you two guys then. You know, what's it like running a startup as a husband and wife team? And can you give any like tips for our listeners who may be doing the same thing?
The biggest tip that we give anybody who's a husband and wife team looking to start up together is don't. You know, it's not easy.
If you have to, you have to know that the wife's the boss, irrespective. The boss. It doesn't matter whether it's work or home, and the wife's the boss.
Okay.
Let's just keep it simple.
I think, you know, there are pros and cons to this thing. I think the pros are you obviously have this amazing shared purpose. It doesn't matter how late you work and how much time you have to spend in office, because you know you're obviously together, and it. Like, you never question where you're going. You don't, there's always this purpose of saying that, yeah, we're building this together. Therefore, you know, whatever sacrifices you need to make are worth it. So that understanding of purpose is actually very, very powerful. The cons are that, you know, there's no separation of work and play. There's absolutely no barrier to discussing work, even at home at 12 o'clock at night when you wake up in the morning. It's crazy. So literally you're living, breathing work all the time, which is not a bad thing as an entrepreneur. But I think as a couple, it can take its toll. I think we're...
So you need to have safe zones. There are places. That's an important one. You need to have safe zones where you do not discuss work. You need to consciously, in case you have been arguing or, you know, being combative at work on any issue, the moment you step out, you have to consciously, you know, remove that out of your psyche so it doesn't carry on to your personal relationship. Mm-hmm. It takes a little doing, but yeah, you can get around to it.
Good stuff. Last few questions then. What's the most surprising thing about your entrepreneurial journey so far, looking back?
I think what shocked
how
me
nice
was,
people are.
Okay.
I'll start on that one, Kamal. It's the thing which is surprising is how nice people were, right? So when we started off, the first board game which got published by this company called Toycraft in India. They're one of the largest guys. They didn't know us from Adam, right? But they published a board game without really expecting anything, and they helped us get through. Indian School of Business, Hyderabad, they allowed us to build a simulation for them without us having, you know, either tech backgrounds or, you know, academic background. Now, a whole lot of people have come forward with the idea of supporting. And now, like, the Power of Ideas, Swami Ahmedabad and CIA. So there's a whole bunch of people who are actually very nice. And you don't expect that, because when you live in a dog-eat-dog world, in the corporate world, you kind of expect everybody to say, what's in it for me? There's a whole lot of people who don't look at things as what's in it for me. You know, today, if we are standing tall on the shoulders of these giants. So, you know, that's amazing for me.
I think what surprised me the most is the ability for us as entrepreneurs to get out of our comfort zone and do what was needed to be done then, right? So, Arijit, for example, you know, is an engineer, but spent 15 years in banking post that, never coded a single line. When we started the business and we started focusing on technology, he actually learned coding from scratch. He's today you know, the sharpest programmer in the company. He can beat our development team hollow. Mm-hmm. You know, so just that grit, just, you know, when your back is against the wall, what you're capable of, I think, is the most surprising thing, which is why I think that what happens is that entrepreneurs or people in general, I think we tend to get limited in our heads of what we can do. Mm-hmm. I think once you break those shackles and you really, your survival depends on it, you'd be surprised at what you're capable of.
Mm-hmm. Did you both quit your job at the same time then? And what was the reaction to your friends and families and employees?
So we quit about 3 months apart. Okay. I quit in 2009. He quit 3 months later in 2010. Mm-hmm. And I think our parents thought we were going mad. You know, we were, I was an investment banker. He was in treasury. We were earning the big bucks. Mm. We had really set careers. And because we didn't have a very concrete idea of exactly what we were going to do and, you know, a ground plan already laid and all of that, I think my father thought that, you know, there was some madness going around. And he even thinks that today. I mean, I don't think he's changed his mind either. But they've come around to the fact that out of the madness has come out something really good. Our friends were actually extremely supportive, and our success today is actually dependent on a very few key people who came in at the right time. Shashank Avasthi was, you know, he's one of our advisors. He came in with some very, very key advice for us on personal life, mm-hmm. which really kind of held us in good stead. He told us that, you know, entrepreneurship is for the long haul. So don't cut down lifestyle to an extent where it makes you so miserable that you just want to go back to the job because you want the money. So make sure that you give yourself, cut yourself some slack, do the things that you still enjoy. Maybe you'll run out of money a little faster, but it'll help you sustain in the long term mentally. I think that has really, really helped us as a couple. As well.
And so, in the initial days, there were like friends like Siddharth Banerjee, Nikhil Banerjee, Arun Rajapaksa, there were a whole bunch of people who actually ensured that we didn't run out of money. Mm-hmm. So basically, they ensured that we didn't run out of money in the days when we did were running out of money. So there was a whole set of people who just gathered together to say, like, you know, no, we will shore you up till you make it through.
Excellent. Last few questions then. What should first-time founders be focusing on?
I think if you're a technology startup, then knowing technology really well is something first-time entrepreneurs really need to do. Because if you have, if the core of your business is a product or it's a particular technology, you have to have the most mastery over it. Because otherwise, you can either never get it done yourself or you can't get it done through a team. Because you don't know whether what they're telling you is right. So if it means learning something, you know, then it's good to kind of in the initial stages, step out of that comfort zone and learn it. Mm-hmm. Put in that one-time effort, because otherwise it's very difficult to sustain going forward. Arjit, do you want to add something here?
Yeah, I would say the single most important thing for any entrepreneur is to close the first sale, and that sale must not be to a friend, a referral. Mm-hmm. It has to be cold. Closing that first cold sale is what tells you that your business is viable. Mm-hmm. Do it fast, get it. It doesn't matter whether you have a product, doesn't matter whether you have anything. If you can get that sale through, you know, that's when you know that there's somebody who's looking for what you have. Mm-hmm.
Excellent advice there. What would you say is the main attribute or quality a first-time founder should have?
Madness.
A little bit of lunacy, I think. Lunacy.
Yeah, madness. It has to be. There's no other... Unless you're mad, you should not even be doing this. There's nothing to gain. It's better to be in a job.
Yeah, I mean, you know, look, the analyst in everybody, the left brain is always going to say, you know, these numbers don't add up. The risks are too high. It just doesn't make sense. I think it takes an entrepreneur to be a little crazy and say, I'm just going to ignore that and go ahead with it. So just that little bit of lunacy, I think, is important. It keeps things fun, and which, as Arjit said right in the beginning, that's the whole point of it. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Excellent advice there. How did you guys meet, by the way?
Oh, we're actually family friends. Our fathers went to IIT together.
Oh, okay.
A very long time ago, and you know, they, I think, they were fed up of us both individually. So they said, why don't we just put them together and, you know, they can annoy the hell out of each other for the rest of their lives.
First time we met, I was playing basketball and she was heckling me because she was supporting the other team.
Oh, boy. Unbelievable. Okay, last question then. For people who want more information on Codec, what must they do?
So we have our website, codec.com, Q-U-O-D-E-C-K.com, where they can go check out the product. They can actually sign up. It's free. They can create something, you know, create a game, put some content in it, put it out for other people to see, just explore and figure out what the product does. Otherwise, they can always write to us at info@codec.com and we'll kind of set up a call and tell them more about it.
Excellent. Thank you, guys. Much appreciated. Thank you for coming on the Indian Startup Show today.
Thank you so much.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you so much.
Brilliant. Thank you, guys. Thanks to Arjit and Kamilika for coming on the show today. That is the end of the show. If you liked it, please leave a rating and review on the show. Just search for the Indian Startup Show on iTunes. We are also on Stitcher and Overcast, Pocket Cast, Downcast, Instacast, Pocket Cast, and Apple TV. If you're building something exciting, please send me an email, hello@neilpatel.co, or tweet @IndianStartupSH, or go to facebook.com/IndianStartupShow. We'd love to connect. So if anyone is interested in creating their own podcast, check out my class on Skillshare.com. It's called Getting Your Podcast Off the Ground. I've been doing this for the last 15 months now. Has over 500 happy students, and it's had great testimonials as well. So check out the link on the show notes to get started. Advantage of doing your own podcast, you get to build something amazing that you own 100%. You've got 100% creative control. You can do whatever you want, and it's a lot of fun as well. So check out the link on the show notes, and you can do your own podcast. Thank you, and goodbye.